Your feet move you from that broad concourse, a place where, concealed, you can blend in with the witches of the coven. You see the little corridor off to one side, a familiar place. When deciding who to go see today, what to do with your time, wondering if the person you most want to see has any free time. She does seem to keep busy. Still, you'd like to see her. The possibility is there. It might be a coincidence, but the exact moment you think that, something catches your eye. When you were here before, the corridor to the east was blocked by a ragged light brown curtain, protecting the side passageway from blowing sand and prying eyes. That made sense, because the lair of the Cum Witch is down there, the place where witches of the coven go to get impregnated by a magically modified member of their order. But now, instead of that ragged curtain, there is a more beautiful sheet in place. A barrier of silk in the door. You couldn't say if it existed even a moment before. You'd be surprised if you missed it coming in. It is light purple and shimmering in captured light. It blows in the magical breeze used for air conditioning and for ventilation down here. But you cannot see beyond it. So you take a moment to observe the comings and goings of others who are headed that same way. The witches of the coven are Spartan in the extreme. They do not have anything unnecessary or frivolous in their lives. The Cum Witch, for example, is constantly overworked, because she's one of very few of her order. But why is a luxurious silk curtain with no blemish or tear hanging down here? No one is taking note of it. Everyone just pushes it aside and goes right through. Can they even see it? Your attention focuses on the curtain itself, trying to see if there's some trick, some little deception intended to make outsiders look out of place. The curtain and the structure around it. A stone archway, roughly carved. There are torches down here to keep it lit, as well as some magical lighting to spread the torchlight. But the light fixture closest to this arch is not a conventional torch. It is a little glass ball, stained glass in various purples, with a candle within, and a hook attached to the glass at the top. The hook is tied by a sash, a silk sash, to a bracket on the wall. Purple silk. Luxurious silk really isn't typical down here. The witches wear simple brown cloth robes, after all. Same color as the desert sand, made to blend in. But no one is commenting on this splash of color in a brown world. You've been down here a few times, and the color of sand was a memorable quality. You know what's up. The light from the little glass lantern bauble shines on the purple silk. The light seems to be caught in places, pooling as if it were liquid before pouring off the curtain. Something about it holds your gaze. The way the light moves is like a signal flashing into your brain, a message made of light and air. The curtain is beckoning you in. When you wonder to yourself whether you ought to go in, a voice in your ear, familiar and perilously sensual, whispers, "Yes, come to me." When you wonder what you should do, those words are there to reassure you, "Yes, come to me." And the words continue, echoed, repeated, when you see the curtain move in the magical breeze. Each flutter of its fine silk echoes with those words amid the flapping. Yes, come to me, come to me. Purred in your ear. Who could possibly refuse? The idea is strange, but you know that no one else can hear the voice. Something is being said, or rather inserted right into your mind, communicated through the complex interplay of shimmering fabric and moving air. But walking over to the curtain seems the most natural thing in the world. You lay hands on it, and a warm report runs up your arm, a feeling of comforting rightness that also flows to the back of your brain and between your legs, speaking and sparking in your body's arousal response as strongly as any creature's aphrodisiac ever could. But you steady yourself, pushing the curtain aside. Well, more accurately, the light on the curtain seems, as you inspect its swirl and movement, to flash an order into your brain. An order to keep walking. Your legs carry you past the curtain and into the corridor beyond. There is no sound of moaning, so the cumwitch must not be working in her office right now. Surprising. The coven contains hundreds of witches, giving birth at accelerated rates as part of their plan. Whatever that may be, one would have to ask the queen. The cumwitch herself is almost always busy during the day. You look around the corridor. No one there except you. The few people you did see walk through seem to have crossed the hall into a bunk room. A communal space that isn't where she'll be. If the witch isn't in her classroom, she's probably in her private chamber. Yes, there, up the corridor. One of your hands is still absent-mindedly stroking the curtain that you traveled through. You're standing to one side so you won't get in anyone's way, but the curtain, silken beneath your fingers, seems to have communicated that you should look up the hall. And you see just what you're looking for. A faint purple light. Your acquaintance is there, but not as you usually know her. You begin at the bottom and look up her form. There's a lot of her to see. Her legs are long. Makes sense, she's tall, 7 feet. Enhanced, taller and stronger than one can imagine. But completely docile. She never raised a hand in violence when she could use lust instead. She looks down at you. Most of her movements are sensual. Those legs are encased in purple silk, slightly darker than the curtain you entered through, a dark purple with light purple lace at the top. Stockings. She's not wearing shoes, but the stones here are warm, so that's no surprise. You notice the way the stockings catch the light, once more seeming to conserve and hoard it, just as the curtain did when it was signaling you. You stand there staring at those stockings. You move against the wall so any witches who come out are not obstructed by your position. And you just begin to slowly meander up the slightly sloped hallway toward the witch. Your eyes are pinned to her stockings, and now the light is curving around them, attaching to them. You haven't even seen the rest of her yet. The light is conserved and trapped, and your eyes are trapped with it. This seems natural, normal. Ordinarily, you have the vague sense you might have responded to such magic by thinking it unusual. But the visual show is for your benefit. And knowing this, you also know you should watch it appreciatively. Knowledge which did not exist a moment before, never explained to you, simply inserted into your mind through the movement of air and light. You feel the thought becoming more correct as you stare. Except, ahem, you hear the noise from higher up. You take it as an instruction to barely tug your vision away from the stockings and look up at the rest of her. Oh, she has gone to a lot of trouble. This is an unusual look indeed. At the top of the visible part of her stockinged legs, the lighter purple lace, and above it, she's wearing more clothes than usual. She's looking around nervously. She must not want others to see. Normally she wears robes and a cloak, a witch's hat, and she can open it all easily to reveal her massive breasts, dripping sex, rigid shaft. You remember the features of this witch. Different from the sandy brown robes of the others, but today she wears nothing like that. Her statuesque muscled form, her perfect black-as-night flesh, is immaculate in a matte silver cocktail dress. It flares out very slightly just below her waist. It shines like stars on the night of her sweated form, glistening in the light. It catches it, traps it, redistributes it, the torches of this hall, and you notice a few of the torches have been replaced with those purple stained glass lanterns with candles inside. But after you notice that, all you can notice is her. Her breasts are huge, just as she is built to slightly taller scale. Each breast considerably larger than your head. But in this dress they are neatly pressed against her chest, raised high, given more shape and definition than usual. The dress goes all the way up and over her shoulders, concealing them, leaving her arms bare. There is no cleavage, and you cannot see any bit of the flesh of her breasts. It's quite a change from usual. You see her face, angular, striking features. Her lips are made up with maroon lipstick. Her eyes with the suggestion of blue eyeshadow. The deep blackness of her skin offset against the makeup. The smile is welcoming and warm. She's genuinely happy to see you. Her long blonde hair is wavy, an unusual contrast with her skin in its impossible darkness. The hair falls past the shoulders of the dress, a brilliant cascade. One dark finger rises, you note maroon nail polish. She beckons you imperiously, before turning her back and walking into the room behind her. There are several doors at the end of this hallway. All the others are open, revealing empty rooms, except the one she went into. These are private rooms, a luxury for this select part of the order of witches in this coven. When she turns away, you watch her sway her hips for your benefit. The shimmering silver of the dress, the dark purple of the stockings, the faint lilac lace, the darkness of her skin, which hoards light the same way the gorgeous clothing does, reflects it back at you, uses it to send messages even you don't fully understand, but which are powerful and inevitable, and you know you will follow their guidance. You have now approached closely enough to reach out and touch the door of her room. But your mind is more slow than usual, glancing at the dress, the outfit, this magnificent container for an imposing and powerful figure. Must have used up a lot of your thought process, even with her having stepped out of the way. Only simple ideas remain, and your eyes keep half-lidding as your mind fixates on the magnificent fabric. You've never seen anything like what she was wearing. The shimmering contrast it made with her skin's deep darkness catches the light equally, sends it into your mind, makes thinking of the material the most natural thing, tweaks your appreciation for it up a notch. Even though she has stepped away into her room, wanting you to follow, you end up leaning against the hallway wall. and only slowly approaching. You can still see that dress on her dark flesh, the stockings in dark purple, the dress in silver. The whole image is luxurious, and the only bright thing in this haven of sand and shadow is her. The alluring image she presented you is disrupted somewhat when you take too long to enter the room, so she steps back into the hall, tapping her stockinged foot. She mouths the words, "Hurry up!" She points to a clockwork mechanism on the wall, indicating the time with hands on a vast wheel. She must be on break. You manage to not look too closely at the stockings and dress by focusing on her face instead, particularly her lips. The maroon lipstick is still shiny, but it isn't actively altering your cognition the way her clothes will if you look at them. She turns her head aside, her bashful glare meeting your more gentle look. "Okay, yeah. I didn't think it through. Stop staring at them. Come on, we don't have much time." She speaks and runs out of sight before you can be captured by her spellbinding clothing once more. You follow her past the door. Another curtain, this one in deeper purple silk. Inside, she has already sat on the edge of a bed. And what a bed! A magnificent four-poster. Nothing like this has ever existed before in the halls of the coven. It has lilac sheets, darker purple hangings with gold trim. It is a four-poster bed up to the ceiling of a room more sizable than you thought it could be. She sits there in her purple stockings and silver dress, her legs neatly crossed, her dress all the more magnificent now that you see it closer up. Those lanterns, those stained glass lanterns you've been seeing since you got here. There are dozens of them, hanging on silken scarves from hooks upon the ceiling. Each is perfectly sealed, so it must be magic that keeps the fire burning and light pouring out from within. These baubles, these decorations, these things of beauty are out of place here. She has a closet, with a tall changing screen in front of it, and outfit after outfit being hung over it. You see them there, gold and blue and red and purple, dresses and stockings alike, the ones she did not choose. There is a mirrored vanity in the corner, with makeup laid out in front of it. All of this is contraband to the witches, but she has it, and she has shared this fact with you. As you go into the chamber, it becomes slightly more difficult to think about that. When you see her outfit, when you saw it before, an idea was planted in your head, and you can feel that idea radiating heat into your consciousness, telling you to become more aroused, to get closer to her, that she is the most beautiful thing in the world, and her clothes only complete the picture. From those baubles come light, and her clothes catch it. Use it. You want to lock your gaze onto them. Once you're inside the room, the door closes softly behind you, providing welcome privacy. The curtain on the outside of it would have blocked view anyway, but it appears there's a door as well. She points to her stockings, but your eyes are already there, exploring the light on their silky surface, the way it draws you forward. Seems to beckon. Increasingly, everything in sight becomes dim. You know there are a dozen lanterns. You know there is light everywhere. But it will be impossible to convince your mind right now that anything in this room is as bright, as beautiful as those stockings. You see her hand come into view, slender black fingers pointing to the floor. You notice a huge, comfortable purple cushion, perfect to kneel on, right up against the edge of the bed. She sits, her legs hanging over it. You kneel. Those purple stockings fill your sight. You feel her reach out. There's a brief sound. The room fades when your knees touch the pillow and her hand touches your forehead. making sure you're staring right at the stockings. You feel very attuned to everything around you. This room, this night, this moment. This is her fantasy and you are in it. Your eyes lock on the purple of the stockings, but you are so close that they fill your vision anyway. Everything might as well be in that dark purple hue. Your face presses right against her stockings. It isn't the clothing itself, it is something it's doing to you. And somehow that knowledge is a positive thing. Some little inversion, some switch flicked in the back of your head, or a dial being turned up. The material is smooth, and you feel the heat of her skin within as you rub your face against the stockings. The whole experience is a bit dreamlike. But your mind doesn't quite register that to be important. All you know is you are nude now. She must have changed something, and you know what you must do. Above you is her heated figure, her warm body. You hear her breathing deeply. You look at the light on her stockings as you kneel. You see the drape of the lilac sheets off the edge of the four-poster bed. This is her dream, a dream she can't normally have. You owe it to her to make it as satisfying as possible. Everything fades. You have the sense you are kissing her stockings. You hear her moaning, but everything seems a little unfocused. Time is passing, things are happening. She's saying words, and you know she's reinforcing whatever spell's already over you. But the stockings make that irrelevant. They just push a little button in your mind that says, none of that matters. Only the light, the color, the sensation, these interactions with the combination lock of your senses, that's what you're thinking about. And that's okay. Now and then she moans, oh. You manage out of the corner of your eye, because looking away from the stockings would be impossible, to see her dark fingers between her legs, touching her sex, obscuring your view. You know she doesn't get much vaginal stimulation in her job, and she seems to be responding very quickly to her own touch, and your gentle kisses up the heated skin of her leg beneath her stocking, but you still feel it radiating heat. You make sure she can feel you smooching right up against her leg, sending warmth into her body. She rests the foot within the other stocking, the one you're not currently kissing, on your shoulder. She pushes you back a bit so you have a better view. You're sitting up with your knees on the plush cushion below. Your vision becomes a bit clearer. It seems the stockings are stronger. Whatever it is they're doing to you. No, with you. No, for you. They're doing you a favor, yeah. Anyway, it's stronger the closer you are. She crosses and uncrosses her legs in front of you at the knee. Just putting on a show. Despite the fact more tantalizing views are above, or what you would normally consider more tantalizing, the stockings have made it so you only have eyes for them right now. The light is still caught in intriguing patterns, snakes and spirals of light along her purple stockings, droplets glowing in the lace at the top of them. Smooth and shining. Yes, it is. You're not sure if those words came from her or the stockings, but you find yourself nodding along, like the muscles of your neck were moving as she moves her legs up and down, crosses them, makes you put in a little effort to follow the light on her stockings, making you follow with your eyes, since you're sitting further back now. Smooth and shining. Indeed, the light hits them in just such a way that they appear to shine from within. She's still crossing and uncrossing her legs, the shimmering light sending signals. You watch. A message arrives. The message those stockings are sending with light must take a while to filter through your brain. Your hands begin to move, You're still nodding along now and then, because you still hear those words occasionally. Smooth and shining. Your hands move lower, insinuate themselves between your legs. You feel yourself masturbating without really having full awareness of telling yourself to do so. The instruction must be coming from somewhere, but it's inevitable. It isn't arousal per se. It's from the clothes. They're tweaking it so the only appropriate way for you to be is touching yourself. Any other way would be wrong. This place, this dream, the witch herself, all of it together is painting a pattern, flicking switches, turning up dials. If you want to keep staring at the stockings, you have to be touching yourself. Somehow that message makes it into your brain, and now you're moving automatically. And since looking away from the stockings is the last thing your beleaguered mind wants, you continue. You must touch. Ascending toward climax, you stare at the stockings. You hear the words again. Smooth and shining. As arousal and stimulation begin to flow through your system from your masturbatory efforts, she beckons you forward, bringing your head between her legs, taking your eyes off of the stockings, but following along with her is more important. Besides, she has a surprise for you. She lays those splendid silk stockings over your shoulders, hooking the backs of her knees next to your head. You feel them rubbing against your ears. You're still pleasuring yourself, hands moving constantly, little grunts escaping you as you force pleasure into your system. You see her tremble as she feels your breath on her inner thighs. The light of this room is enough for you to see clearly between her legs. She is wearing panties. That's unusual as well. A silky pair in dark purple. It matches the stockings. She has carefully tucked the rigid shaft she had you play with last time out of the way. It's actually quite small and flaccid now. She's focusing only on her sex, only on her pussy, and she wants you to look at it, you can tell. She's moved the underwear enough for you to see her wet, dripping slit. Completely shiny. Smooth and shining and wet. You hear the words and that extra word on the end. And indeed, the same feeling you had about her stockings, you now have about the wet slit in front of you and the purple underwear surrounding it. Her panties move to the side. You lean in to lick and kiss, your tongue extending. You hear the words again, but they sound muffled. Smooth and shining and wet. The words are coming from your own mouth. Maybe they once also came from hers. Maybe they once came from the stalking message of light. But they're coming from you now. Your masturbation increases in speed as you lick her. She tastes like citrus and sugar. She's delicious. Her juices pool on your tongue. You keep murmuring into her wet, dark flesh. Smooth and shining and wet. You see the purple of her panties because you keep your eyes open. Above, you see the shaft tucked and pressed firmly against her belly. She isn't hard at all. Only her sex matters right now, and so you lick it. You see the lighter colored nub of her clitoris poking out. You capture it between your lips. You feel her moaning, rolling her hips, her whole body bucks. She locks her legs behind your head and begins to moan loudly. The bottom of her dress is behind your head. Her stockings are around your shoulders. You're entrapped in a cage of that wonderful fabric. It's everywhere, in front of you, above you, behind you. Yeah, right there, yeah. She's enthusiastic, and her hands are now rubbing your scalp, pushing you against her. Her juices dot your chin. She seems very vulnerable to pleasure in that place. You feel the bottom of the silver dress against the back of your head. Its silken texture reminds you of what you were murmuring. Smooth and shining and wet. The witch begins to come, you can tell. You reach a hand up and touch her silvery dress over her belly. Her abdominal muscles are tensing beneath it. And then the sudden, loud exhalation of her breath. The moan that follows, almost a wail. She locks your face against her pussy, crying out, but this means you can see her underwear close up, smooth and shining and wet. You murmur the words with her engorged clit in your mouth. She has so seldom felt pleasure on her sex that she's coming again and again. You see the shiny fabric in your mind as it gives you the message, tells your lips to say the words, and it seems normal, seems right, seems mandatory, seems inevitable that you murmur them over and over into her pussy, making your hot breath send her into a second light orgasm where moments before she'd been waiting to wind down in the aftershocks. Smooth and shining and wet, your hands work between your legs. Smooth and shining and wet, desperate words escaping your lips, coming from the stockings, a natural thing to do. Smooth and shining and wet, obsessing over her sex as much as you are over the fabric. Her panties in front of you, the silver dress against the back of your head, the purple stockings touching your ears, her legs laid over your shoulders, locked behind your head to keep you licking. She wails again, ah, a long, unearthly sound that shudders through her. You feel it in your head. You're not sure if it's because of the way you've been masturbating or an echo of her sensation, but the message coming from her clothing is clear and bright. White-hot pleasure fireworks in your brain. Come, come, coming. She's saying the words, and so are you. Your mind feels smooth and shining and wet, and so, so good. Your body's spasming, caught up in her fantasy, her need, shuddering, reacting to her, close to her, her skin against yours. Then she falls back on the bed and is silent. Likewise, you shakily, languidly feel your hands are able to leave the space between your legs. Whether you keep pleasuring yourself is up to you. Maybe you're already satisfied. But no longer are you being encouraged by her sexy clothing. Your hands keep touching. Your body might be shuddering, too. It's hard to tell if you're coming, going to come, or feeling sympathetic pleasure from what you did to her. You can still see her wet sex, her dress hiked up a bit, her stockings spread wide, her legs. She's still shivering now and then. One of her legs kicks a few times in the afterglow. Slowly, you rise to your feet and manage to look away from the stockings. How long was that? Surely her break is over by now. Your sense of time feels peculiar. Whatever the view of her magnificent, glamorous clothing did to you, it has not been fully undone yet. You begin to walk to the door, preparing to go. Wait. When you turn, at her command, to your disappointment, her clothing is back to her usual. Dark robe and witch's hat. No sign of the stockings. Or the dress. Gone that quickly. Still you see dampness running down her inner thighs, her sexual juices provoked by the rare service you've given her vagina and clitoris, so often neglected. Her inner thighs, her legs dappled, her voice an insistent purr. She's getting to her feet with some difficulty. Her honeyed words are made somewhat less imposing by the way she almost stumbles. Wait right there, she says. You reach out to steady her, and she lets you. Then she leans into your arms, kissing you, fully on the lips. A long, searching, smacking movement of lips and tongue exploring yours, her hands grabbing the back of your head. Her mane of blonde hair is disheveled, her body muscled and glistening in the light. her huge breasts now revealed beneath the easily parted robes, with their massive nipples pointed. She is undeniably beautiful. Lack of pretty clothes is actually irrelevant. When she kisses you, it is fire and passion, tongue dancing in your mouth, body against yours. She sucks your tongue, drinking your saliva happily, and then leans back. She stays with you right up to the door, which swings open. In your mind, you see the images still. Stockings, panties in purple, the silver dress, her wet pussy beckoning your kiss, the way her belly tensed and she scrunched up in orgasm, and then shuddered and arched her back as it passed through her. You remember it all. But once you cross out the threshold of the room, you dare to glance back. She breaks the kiss, of course, as you leave, but moves aside to let you see the room beyond. No vanity, no changing screen, no lanterns. A simple stone bunk room, with a comfortable but functional bed. Certainly no four-poster with hangings, no lilac sheets. The pillow on the floor is straw, not the plush thing you remember kneeling on. She makes sure your concealing disguise is in place, pulling it over your naked form, covering you from sight. She points down the hall. You still feel remnants of the command from her stockings. Your mind is docile. You go where she points. Behind you, there's a little sound as she closes the door slowly but whispers, "Come back and visit sometime." You have a lot to think about as your legs carry you into the cool concourse and toward your home, with her taste on your lips and the memory of shining, smooth, wet fabric going with you. It isn't the first time in your association with her that you've wished she had just a little more free time. Maybe you could meet her in the desert, go for a drink somewhere. But she has her job, and you have these rare dalliances. Would it really be okay to ask for more?